All right, guys, welcome back. EYL Atlanta edition. Very special for us.
Yeah.
For a couple of different reasons. We're going to get into it. But before we start, we got some exciting news. You know, we've been traveling around the country. We do our network meet and greets, just going to our biggest markets. And we started in LA, and we went, that was crazy. LA was the first one. And then we went to Brooklyn. Brooklyn crazy. Was crazy. There was so many people, it was actually just spilled out into the streets.
They're still
crazy.
Talking about it.
Yeah, shout out to BK, for sure, that's a fact. And then we went to Atlanta. We was in Atlanta, we had 450 people come out. And then Houston was the biggest one so far. Houston. So Chicago, by the time you hear this, it's gonna be 2 days. September 26th, we're coming to Chicago. So it's free network meet and greet. The purpose of the network meet and greet is not a seminar, it's not a workshop. It is for you to network with each other. Most importantly, you're gonna meet us, you're gonna bring some of our guests. But you never know who might be your business partner, who might be, you know, somebody that you can do real estate with. And these are the things that we need to do more of as far as networking and really building. So we mix it with a whole different type of vibe because, you know, we're not a traditional business podcast. No. So it's like a party, but productive tendencies.
Yeah, I think
so,
people show up with shirts and ties and they look at us like, yo, y'all in t-shirts?
Yeah, we coming, like, yeah, we coming in t-shirts. Kind of and, you know, by the end of the night, you're going to have a couple of drinks and you're going to have some good food and it's going to be a whole vibe. So yeah, Chicago, this is my first time going to Chicago. So I'm looking forward to it. So make sure y'all check us out, man, for sure, for sure. And then we have our workshop that we are launching as well. So as you know, EYL, every single week we bring a different professional in and they give us free gems and free game and we really appreciate that. So we wanted to build an extended platform off of that. So we're launching our workshop series and that's going to be live in New York City once a month. And we also going to live stream it as well for anybody anywhere in the world. So the first one is going to be for first time real estate investors. We're going to go over some hard money loan tactics, things of that nature with our guy, MG, the mortgage guy. Make sure that y'all register for that. That's on the events tab on our website as well. We're looking forward to that.
That's a fact. So people always asking when we coming back to New York. This is for you.
Yeah,
every
we never left. That's the crazy thing. People act like when y'all coming back to New York. We never left New York. We live in New York, but this is for New York for sure. But it's for not just New York. It's for the whole world. Yeah. So make sure y'all check
everybody
that out.
Everybody can tune in.
So all right, we got that out the way. So we have to welcome our esteemed guest, Mr. Jay Morrison. Thank you for joining us.
What's up, bro?
Yeah, so I got to get a backstory on this. So, you know, we have, we try to bring people from all walks of life and all industries. And, you know, the number one person that everybody has been requesting for months now is
most
Jay
requested.
Morrison.
Yeah, that's
sure.
a fact, man.
In real life. Sure, they like, and when they get aggressive, they like, if you're really serious, get Jay Morrison. Yeah, like, I tried. Yeah. What do you want me to do? Like, reach out to him.
Y'all guys ain't real to you.
Yeah. Like, so it's okay. Like, all right, man, y'all can stop asking. We got him. So if you don't know, legendary real estate investor, social activist as well. Thank you for all of the work that you do on that end, for your advocacy. Yeah. But really dynamic guy. He's wrote books. He's done lectures. He's a real estate developer. He's actually the CEO of the Tulsa Real Estate Fund, which is the first black real estate equity crowdfunding fund. Is that correct?
Yeah, in history.
In history. We're gonna go over all of that, but it, you know, he has a very extensive, very impressive resume. And anybody in the financial literacy circle, especially in our community, you know that he's been a leader for years before a lot of us was involved in social media. I'm a financial advisor. I just got in social media a couple years ago, but I saw you before I got involved. So he's definitely been a trailblazer and somebody that we've all acknowledged as a leader and a trailblazer. So first and foremost, thank you. Thank you for rocking with us. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no
I appreciate
doubt,
it.
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to jump right into it. So when I first heard about you, it was years ago and you was a realtor.
Yeah.
Right? And I guess like a celebrity realtor because I saw you on TV. So, all right. We all know your story about, you know, you was in the streets and you got incarcerated. What made you get into being a realtor first and foremost? And from there, how did you transition to actually being an investor?
Well, actually, I started as an investor first before a realtor.
Okay.
Right? So when I left the streets in 2005, I left South 10th and Springfield Ave in Newark, New Jersey. After a 10-year dope boy career. When I left the streets, one of the first things I did is I acquired a single family home from a tax lien and foreclosure situation my mom had. I helped her out of that situation and I built my credit over the years because I learned about building credit and mortgages while I was on parole at 22 years old in Plainfield, New Jersey. And so by the time I was 25 years old and I was ready to retire the dope game and do something different and productive with my life, and stop and beat the trap. So I'd already purchased a home under my name for my mom because my credit was better than hers. She was facing a foreclosure. And then I went and got my own duplex, my own two family with 4 acres of land, 100% financing and at that time. And so as I purchased that property and I saw the commissions that the realtor made $13,000. He showed me the property twice. Mm. I'm like, bro, that 13 racks could have been mine. I could do what he did. You know what I'm saying? And I knew at that time I planned on buying more properties. So I'm like, if I'm going to be on this path as an investor and landlord buying more properties, then I need to be in a position to get that other check too. And so I went and got my real estate license at that time. And then as I was going to buy more properties, I also got my mortgage license at that time. So I was a loan officer, I was a realtor, and I was an investor, landlord, and developer breaking into the game. That's where I started the brand Mr. Real Estate back then in like 2005, 2006.
And so you went from one medium to the next, right? And what triggered you to say like, this is the way I'm gonna go, like I'm going into real estate?
I mean, for me, it was a couple things. One, you know, when I was in the streets, my you know, I started selling drugs at 15 years old. My whole family sold drugs. You know, I mean, my grandfather sold dope, my uncle sold dope, my mom sold dope. Like, that was just our family trade. And that was a norm for me. And when I was hustling through my teens and I got locked up at 18 years old in New York on Riverside Drive in Harlem, facing 3 years of life in prison for a quarter kilo of coke and a loaded handgun, did a 1-3 in New York, went upstate, cutting down trees for 13 cents a day. Came home on work release in Harlem, a Lincoln work release by Central Park. Went right back to the game like a month later. Like I said, like, I'm giving myself 2 months off, so I'm coming home, give myself 2 months of freedom, and then I'm going right back. Listen, I came home November 3rd of 1999. I got back trapping January 19th of 2000. I remember the date.
Wow.
And got right back at it and tore it up. But then I caught another charge less than a year later, a drug trafficking charge in Maryland and a secret indictment in New Jersey. End up beating part of that charge because the cops illegally searched my vehicle. Still did prison time about 18 months between Maryland and New Jersey. Came home from that on intense supervision parole where I had to have this men's group meeting where I learned about mortgages.
Okay.
Still, after I learned about that, I went back to trapping for a few more years. Old habits die hard. get rich or die trying. And so through all that, my family would be like, hey, Jay, my daughter was born while I was in prison. My daughter's 20 years old now. She goes to one of the top 20 colleges in the country. She's a first black woman president of her sorority. Like, she's phenomenal. But she was born while I was in prison. And my first time seeing her was on the visiting room floor.
Wow.
My daughter slept with me in trap houses, like bagging up, you know, and now she's, you know, on to where she's at. But her mother used to say, you know, why can't you stop selling drugs? And they would, literally my family would cry to try to get me to stop. And I said, well, when y'all show me something where I can make the money I'm making now, right, live the lifestyle that I want to live and feed my family. If y'all show me that hustle, I'm in. Until then, shut the fuck up. Right? And so,
period.
Like, don't tell me to stop doing something. You're not giving me another way or another route to do something else.
Yeah, show me an out.
I'm not getting a job. Like, that's out. Like, it's not even happening.
That's
so, you know what I mean? So, anyway, real estate, as I saw the checks that were being made. So, when I closed that first two family, I saw the owner of that. He owned it for maybe like 7 or 8 or 9 years, but he made 100 racks. Mm. I'm like, wait, he just owned this shit for a few years, got some rental income, and cashed out 100 on me? Like, I bought it from him. The realtor made 13. Yeah. He made 100, but I'm the one that went here and financed it. And I was like, you know what? This is all right. And then when I bought my mom out of that foreclosure, I helped my mom buy this house, FHA financing, in 99 when I came home. I gave my mom $3,000. She bought a house in Somerville, New Jersey for $100,000. 3 years later, that house would have been valued $100,000. So when I cleared out her foreclosure she was in, we ended up selling it and cashing out like 99. My mom gave me $33,000 just for helping her with a $10,000 tax lien she had. And so I took the $33,000 and went and bought, you know, a bird with it and went back in the streets. But my point is, I saw that real estate was lucrative, right? So to answer your question in this long roundabout way,
that was it.
What got me into it was like, okay, this real estate thing has some viability here.
It showed you an out.
To be my new hustle. Mm-hmm. And as I was approaching 25 years old and I'm trapping in Newark and I had another close call with the feds and some other shit, and also I'm like, yo, this is like, when I'm 30, I couldn't see myself being free or alive at 30. Like, I literally tried to picture myself approaching 25 years old, where I was going to be when I was 30, and all I could imagine was dead or in jail. I couldn't even see myself balling or new. You know what I mean? I didn't even see a victory for myself.
Damn.
So I was like, if I can't picture myself winning, I can't continue this hustle. Mm. And so I literally broke my trap phone. I quit. Like, that day, I thought about the shit. Shit didn't make sense no more.
Yeah.
And I literally had cold turkey. I had work left and everything. Gave it to my man. Like, yo, I'm out.
You said, like, I mean, you have the date in your head, so it's like that meant something.
Like I'm out. And so I was like, you know what? Because I challenged myself. I said, you know, a drug dealer can only sell drugs. A true hustler can hustle anything. Hmm. And I'm like, yo, am I a drug dealer or am I really a hustler? And I was like, so what would happen if I took all, I grind, I get busy. Like, my energy level is always high. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, what would happen if I took the same energy, 24-hour shifts on the block, the same energy taking trips, you know, all that, trips to Nebraska, Maryland. I'm talking, I'm tearing the highways up, streets up, planes up, trains up, all that. So I said, what if I took the same innovation, same energy? I'm breaking down work. I'm making pressing machines at welding shops, all type of shit, bro. Like, I'm nuts. And so I was like, if I take this same innovation and energy, the same charisma and swag, and I put it into the real estate industry, what would happen? Full time, like my full effort, the full court press. And so I said, well, if I'm truly a hustler, let me go see. And that's when I, you know, cold turkey, dropped the drug game, got into the real estate game, started as that landlord, got my real estate license, my mortgage license, ended up making my first million in 3 years in real estate.
But so how did you scale? Okay, so everybody's in real estate, right? And there's a lot of real estate agents and realtors and mortgage brokers. So, all right, you're coming off the streets with no formal education.
None.
You graduated from high school?
I did. I dropped out of high school, 11th grade, and then I went back to the TOPS program for alternative kids, and I graduated from a vocational school. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you have that, but, you know, really no other formal education. So how do you go from being an ex-drug dealer to being a celebrity realtor? Like, you know, I'm assuming you was like in the top 10%, 5%, whatever realtors to, you know, whatever. How does that happen? Like,
I actually brought my office's highest listing in Fort Lee office, $10 million listing from Alpine. It was the highest office listing in my office. And I was the first African man in America hired by Prominent Properties, Sotheby's International Realty, in Prominent Properties. But
so how did that happen? For your realtors that are still realtors themselves, like how trying to like break through the, because it's a lot of them. So like how did that happen?
It's the same intangible skills, bro. It don't matter if it's realtors, selling shirts, selling hot dogs, selling drugs. It's the same thing. Is that I went and found a connect. Like, I'm intentional. So when I was a real estate agent, and I started off with Keller Williams and being a regular residential agent, and, you know, I went through that phase for a few years. You know, I started actually managing two mortgage companies as I worked my way up from a loan officer. I just engulfed the business. But as I got kind of tired or bored, and it's another long story within that, which I'll save us. But when I got to the point where I was like, you know what, this ain't really sexy. This ain't really my swag just to be a real estate agent. Like, that's just not like, that shit ain't really cool to me. So I was like, Mr. Reality, wasn't it? Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I'm like, you know what though? I see these guys on TV doing the high end houses, the $1 million listers and all of that. I'm like, you know what? I could dig that. I could get fly and, you know what I mean? Do the $1 million lister, multi-million houses. So what I did was I Googled richest towns in New Jersey. Simple. I said, I want to sell high end houses. I want to be a luxury real estate agent. So where the fuck the luxury real estate properties at? Right. So I Googled richest towns in New Jersey. Alpine, New Jersey came up. I went and took 9 interviews in 2 days in Alpine. And then as I'm up in Alpine seeing all these multi-million-dollar houses, I see all these blue signs in front of these, the biggest houses. And I couldn't even pronounce Sotheby's. I didn't know what the fuck that shit was. It was like, I didn't know how to pronounce it. But I'm like, all right, they winning. Like, this Sotheby's, this blue sign with this S-O-T-H-E-B-Y, whatever, however you say that, they winning.
Right now.
And so I rolled past the Sotheby's branch office in Alpine, and then I walked into the office, and after meeting with Weichert and Caldwell Banker and a few other agents, branches up there, and the manager of the office, she just fell in love with me. Her name was Mary. She just fell in love with me. Was like, oh my God, you're so handsome. You're so this, that, dirt. I told her my story. I told her everything. The felonies, where I come from, the whole thing. Yeah. And she was just like, that's so awesome.
Like, I'm so happy you turned it around.
Right, like, we love you. Like, you know what I mean? And so she talked to the CEO of the company, and we had a meeting with them, and I went to their, you know, other branch, and bro, they hired me.
Yeah, so was there a specific listing that changed the game for you from that being at that position?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was so much a specific listing. What changed the game for me was Sotheby's had great branding.
Can you explain what Sotheby's is? Because I'm going to ask you a question about them, but a lot of people might not know who that actually
is. Yeah, so Sotheby's International Realty, Sotheby's as a company, they function in luxury assets, period. So they're mainly in art world, right? The art, diamonds, and high-end real estate. So Sotheby's throughout the world is known really for their art auctions, for their diamonds and jewelry, and for their high-end luxury real estate. And so that was attractive to me. And so anyway, being at Sotheby's, I learned so much about a different level of business infrastructure and a different level of branding and marketing, right? And that's what really changed the game for me. Why my brand's so like dope now. You know what I mean? It's like I really saw how they package things and really, you know, high level. And the owner's son, and I don't really per se big, actually, I don't really have a grudge with Sotheby's. They asked me to resign, and I'll get to that story later, but it actually propelled my whole career, so I actually appreciate the blessing. They asked me to resign because of my vocalness about being a spokesperson in the black community, and it didn't match their brand. But nevertheless, the owner's son, Michael Oppler, he challenged me as I was new in the business and said, okay, listen, you were Mr. Real Estate in Central Jersey. You know, it's cool you were the guy in urban America, but up here, that shit don't fly. And he was like, you know, why would someone trust you with their multi-million-dollar house? What's different from you than all these other agents who live here, who come from here, who don't look like you? You know, what's your why? Why do you want to be here and why do you want to do real estate? And he sent me a video from some guy on YouTube and some small crowd, and the video was like, find your why or whatever. And I watched it. And it really touched me, and it made me think about, so they challenged me to bring them a business plan of my why and what I was going to do different at Sotheby's if they were to, you know, get behind me. And so I said my why I'm excited about real estate is because the way real estate changed my life. And I want to bridge the gap between real estate and pop culture, meaning our culture, right? Pop culture. Right. And so I made this business plan deck. I still have it in my email. It had Jay-Z and Beyonce on the front. And it was like bridging the gap between real estate and pop culture. And I gave them my business plan of how I was going to impact pop culture and put everybody on a real estate. It had everything from teaching in high schools, teaching in colleges, doing celebrity events to open houses to all these creative things that I literally do now today.
Yeah.
But that was my why. And so I had the opportunity through one of my friends at the time who was promoting me and supporting me. She was just Googling and researching online different networks that had opportunities for realtors. And NBC was looking for a realtor for their show, Open House NYC. And I happened to have a client at the time, Muhammad Wilkerson, shout out to Mo. They were doing their Super Bowl edition. So when we hit him, we said, listen, I got an NFL client. You know,
former Jets player.
Yeah, former Jets player. Yeah. I have an NFL client, and they were like, oh, perfect. Can we bring him on for NBC? So I hit him up. He's like, yeah. So I went and showed him two high-end properties on NBC. And then NBC hit me back like, hey, this is the highest ratings that we had all year. Mm. Like, you know what I mean? We loved you on the show. You're so natural. Can you do any more? I'm like, all right, cool. So then I started taking other clients, Angela Yee, Bobby Yan, the twins from the 40-40 Club. Those are my bros. I forgot their name, I bet. But anyway, I was taking different people I knew in my network on NBC, right? And so I brought that value to Sotheby's as well. So now I'm on NBC representing Sotheby's in front of 2 to 3 million viewers every week, right? As I was featuring and obviously lifting my brand at the same time. But during that time, I didn't lose track of my why. My why was to bridge the gap between real estate and pop culture. So I also was teaching or going to inner city schools, and I started a program called Hip Hop to Homeowners, where I was teaching inner city kids about real estate, mortgages, credit, and all that. And I did it through I was thinking like, okay, if I want to bridge the gap between real estate and pop culture, it's cool to teach us, old heads, but what about the youth who could have got this game earlier and been way ahead of the game than us?
Yeah.
So I was like, well, if I was 17, how the hell would I want to learn real estate? I wouldn't want somebody coming in and giving me some boring lectures talking about real estate. So I was like, you know what? Let's bring some music in, let's get some giveaways, right? And so I put together a program like in 1 week on my iPad in my crib, just put together a little keynote, my first little keynote I ever made on my iPad presentation. And I just, that was in January. And then February, January, I started calling, cold calling schools saying, hey, listen, I'm a celebrity realtor. I want to teach this game to kids in your school. I went to Carteret High School in New Jersey, Malcolm X Shabazz in Newark, Central High School in Newark, where the Honorable Mayor Roz Baraka of Newark, he once was a principal there. He was one of a principal when I did his school. And just 30, I did 30 schools in 1 year where I was teaching using DJ Little Man and other DJs. Rockaware sponsored it, giving us giveaways. And I was just teaching kids about financial literacy and real estate and this creative ass assembly. And it was really getting it though.
Yeah.
Like 450 kids, 600 kids, 800 kids, inner city kids who are learning the definition of credit, who are learning mortgage, right? And all, you know, all that. And so all that again just wound up into my why and what I did uniquely at Sotheby's was that, so you asked me about a listing, and it wasn't a listing that set me off. Now I did bring in a high-end listing. I beat this guy down and brought in a $10 million listing and had, you know, other real estate activity going on. But my focus, I realized, wasn't the real estate. And Sotheby's realized that too. Like, hey, you know what? You're not really focusing on real estate. But I was focusing on the why you told me to find.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? My why wasn't to list high-end houses.
Impact the culture.
My why was to impact the culture. And so Sotheby's and I had a brand clash. And when I dropped my wake up video on WorldStar, telling the community to wake the fuck up and get our stuff together, that's when, you know, after a few conversations, the CEO was like, yo, you know, I saw a 9-minute video of you being a spokesman for the black community. And although you're comfortable with that, I am not. I'm going to ask you to resign. And I was like, all right, cool. At that time, Coldwell Banker had asked me to be a brand ambassador for them for North America. They wanted me to be their brand ambassador for North America for Coldwell Banker. So we had those conversations. I went over to Coldwell Banker. That didn't work out. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm done with this realtor thing. I think it's time for me to really pursue what I really want to do. And I also realized, while showing a lot of NFL guys, NBA guys, houses and all that kind of stuff, I'm like, wait, bro, I just showed you 13 houses. I'm a great consultant. I asked you every question first. So I knew exactly what you wanted. Mm-hmm. I gave you everything you wanted. You brought your girl. She liked it. Then you had to file your mother-in-law in, and then she didn't like it. You had to go back to the drawing board, another one. So I'm like, wait, I just spent like 3 days of my life showing you houses in hopes to get a commission, all for you to say, you know what, bro, I'm going to wait till after the season.
I'm good.
I was like, you know what? This is not the best opportunity cost of my time.
Yeah.
I was like, I know how to invest. I know how to get real estate money. Why would I spend time showing you 40 houses to hopefully get a commission when I can take that same time to go get a fix and flip, a development, a lot myself, and go make even more money? And so it just dawned on me that what I wanted to do, I was going about it backwards. It was a great entry going as a realtor, but it's not. I didn't want to be a celebrity realtor. I mean, that's how I came and built part of my brand. But it was like, no, I mean, I'm a developer. I'm a hustler. I'm a builder. I'm a, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I'm not just that. And so I segued then into focusing back on my real estate investment company. I then launched the J. Morrison Academy in January of 2014 and got into full-blown education. Our curriculum together and all that other kind of
stuff. So the root of the J. Morrison Academy, that was based off the programs you were doing in the city schools of Newark, New Jersey?
Yeah, so that was like, so actually the root of J. Morrison Academy was the WorldStar video. I got so many, that WorldStar video did like 250,000 views the first day.
That's the wake up.
The wake up, yeah, and back in the Maybach. And I got so many emails of people like, yo, bro, how can I get mentored by you? Bro, I stopped gangbanging because of you. Bro, that shit makes sense. Bro, whoa, right? And so I'm like, damn, I can't mentor all these people. And so I was like, yo, how do I know the game though. Like, bro, I literally transitioned out of the street from the mud. Like, bro, I had no corporate etiquette, no professional etiquette. Like, I didn't know how to send an email. In 2005, when I got into real estate, I like sent an email up. I'm like, what? Like, how you do that? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? So I mean, I built this, and I built myself up from the ground. And so I knew I could give back and impact people, but I didn't know what vehicle to do that. And one-on-one, I mean, I only got so much capacity.
Yeah.
And so that's when I was like, okay, I didn't know what's called the curriculum back then, but I was like, okay, I'm gonna put together, like, I'm gonna automate like what I know. So I'm gonna teach what I know, I'm gonna record it, I'm gonna do mentorship calls every week so people don't watch videos like YouTube, but you actually can call me every week and get mentorship. So I opened up a group mentorship line, I put together a curriculum, got with some developers, put together our school website. I thought of the idea in November 2013. We did a soft launch December 2013. We launched our school January 8th of 2014. And since then, had over 80,000 students, are now Inc. 500 top 10 educational companies in the country.
Wow. For sure.
In real life.
All right. So now we got the backstory. So in the next segment, we're going to go into some gyms and get some education on real estate, because that's what we're here
that's
for.
That's what I do.
All right, so now we're going to talk about some key terms, because we had a couple real estate episodes, but each real estate episode is different. Mm-hmm. And I jotted down some stuff that A, I got from your page, mm-hmm. and B, that we haven't covered yet, so I think it'll be good information. So first thing I want to talk about is a HELOC, right?
Okay.
And I saw on your page you had something about refi versus HELOC. So we talked about the refi, but can you explain the HELOC? We haven't covered HELOCs yet. Can you explain HELOC? Well, what does the HELOC even stand for?
All right, so HELOC is home equity line of credit, and it's a way to tap into your equity without restarting your mortgage again. So like with a refinance, you're getting a whole new loan, whole new mortgage. So you could have paid your house down for the last 17 years and you get a refinance, you're back to zero on a 30-year mortgage,
mm-hmm.
To tap into your equity. With a HELOC, you can tap into your equity, keeping your existing mortgage, but now you put a second mortgage or a mortgage piggybacking that mortgage right behind it, and you can tap into your equity that way through a second mortgage, not resetting your first mortgage. And with a HELOC, it's a home equity line of credit. So it's not a new loan, but it's a line you can tap into. So with the refinance, you got to start paying on that capital the day you refinance, yeah. right? That whole new loan. With a HELOC, it just says, hey, I got access to this 70 grand and I only pay on whatever I use of that 70 grand. So if I find a property in Detroit that I can go acquire for 11,000 and put 20,000 into and flip I'm only going to pay on $21,000 I borrowed from the HELOC. As opposed to if I refinance and pull $70,000 out, I'm paying interest on that whole $70,000. With a HELOC, you're only paying interest on the amount you use.
Is it a separate statement? Like, so when you get your...
Yes.
It's a completely separate statement.
It's a whole separate loan. It is a second loan to your existing loan.
But does it still go off of the equity? All right, so the refi is like you have a $200,000 house and it goes up to $400,000. Now you have $200,000 of equity. You can refi from that, right? Is the HELOC still based off of that equity? Or?
Well, let's correct that. This is a big misunderstanding that we teach in the J. Morrison Academy for our students. Many times we think that, okay, I got a house that's $200,000, right, that I owe, and it's worth $400,000, right? Mm-hmm. So you're like, yo, bro, I got $200,000 equity. What can I do? Yeah, you got $200,000 of equity, but you don't have $200,000 equity that you can use, right? So the banks have something called a loan to value, what we call LTV, right? So you hear the term LTV, it means loan to value. And so the banks may say, we'll lend you 80% LTV or 80% loan to value. So if the value of your home is $400,000, the bank's saying we'll give you 80% of that $400,000, which is $360,000. Right. So if you owe $200,000 and the bank's only going to loan you 80% of your value, which is $360,000,
minus that.
That means you really got $160,000 in equity you can use, right? Okay. So you don't get the full $200,000, okay, right? Okay. Same thing with a HELOC, though. The bank says, hey, we're gonna give you an 80% LTV on your HELOC. Then that means you get 80% of that 400, 360. But now we're not gonna reset your mortgage. You still owe the same 200, but we'll give you a credit line for the 160. And you only pay on what you use of that 160 whenever you use it. You could pay it back down, use it again, pay it back down, use it again, and you only pay on what you use. But it's only based on the LTV of the house. You do not get the full value of your equity unless a bank is giving you 100% LTV.
So, all right, each person's situation is different, but is one better than the other, in your opinion, or?
There's, in a blanket statement, I would say the HELOC is more preferred in a blanket statement. I don't really like blanket statements because I believe, like what you just said, every scenario is different, which is why I believe in being an informed investor. If you know how a refi works and the pros and cons, and you know how a HELOC works and the pros and cons, based on your specific scenario and situation, you can choose what makes more sense.
Right, right.
For instance, you may only have been in your house for a year and a half, and now you can get a refinance at a 5.5% rate of your equity at an 85 LTV. You go to the bank and you want a HELOC, they may say we're only giving you an 80% LTV, which is less equity you tap into, and we're gonna charge you a 7.5% rate. Being that you've only been in your property for a year and a half, you might wanna take the refinance, which is cheaper interest and more equity you can tap into, and you're only restarting your mortgage by 1 year.
Right?
So depending on your scenario, when you're informed, you can make strategic decisions.
Is it based, so typically are the interest rate a little higher on a HELOC, or does it depend on the scenario?
Yeah, most times you'll find that a HELOC is higher because it's a second mortgage. Okay. So what that means when you have a second mortgage is that if you were to foreclose or default on your loan, the first mortgage gets paid first. The second mortgage only gets the leftovers. Mm. So as a second mortgage lender, you take more risk having a second because you may not get paid if things go bad. So if I'm a lender, which I am a private lender, if I'm a lender, and you want a second mortgage from me, I'm not going to give you the same rate as your first mortgage. I'm taking more risk.
Right.
So a HELOC can be and typically may be more expensive than your first mortgage refi or traditional loan.
So you're a private lender, you say?
I sure am.
Hard money loans?
Hard money, soft money, creative financing, joint ventures, mezzanine financing, gap financing, constructive funding, all that.
And that's through which
commercial? What's that?
That's the Tulsa Fund?
That's the Tulsa Real Estate Fund. We are a private lender and we are a development company. We are a full blown investment company.
All right, so we'll talk about that in the next segment for sure. So, what about cost segregation? What's that?
All right, so cost segregation is a tax strategy or tax vehicle you can use when, as a full time investor, real estate investor, you can. Basically, cost segregate means you can deduct the personal tangible property of an asset. So right now we're in this building, right? Mm-hmm. The owners of this building can deduct anything in this building they can take off with a screwdriver and a hammer from their earned income. So if the owners of this building were wealthy and they made, you know, they're making $10 million a year, but they own this whole asset and it's all these doors in here, every single door, every knob, every stairwell, every HVAC, every cabinet that they can take off with a screwdriver and a hammer, they can take the value of that and deduct it from their earned income, therefore reporting less earned income, therefore paying less taxes and mitigating or minimizing their tax exposure.
How about the acronym IRR?
Okay, IRR is internal rate of return. IRR is basically an ROI, but calculating the importance and significance of time in an ROI. So if, for instance, we invested in something today and we flipped it this year, made 33%, that's 30, or let's use an even number, we made 30%, right, in 1 year. So ROI is annualized, right? So we made 30% in 1 year. Let's say we made $15,000 in 6 months. $15,000 in 6 months is equivalent to an IRR of $30,000 in 1 year. It's saying if I were to do this again for the same 6 months, right, it would be $30,000.
Yeah, it's duplicated.
Right. So now if you have $30,000 in 1 year as an ROI, but now let's say you made the same money, but it took you 2 years to make the same money. So now your IRR over 2 years would be 15%. Right? Because now you're looking at, I made 30% on 1 year. But now if I break it up over 2 years, right, the ROI on it, considering time, is now 15%. Now if it's 3 years, it's broken up, and now you made maybe 10% or whatever that number may be, right? Yeah. And then et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's formulas you can use on your calculator. I don't try to do the math, you know, myself in my head. But what IRR does is it calculates your return on investment considering the opportunity cost of your capital over time.
So, all right. The next one,
and guess what? I never went to college.
The next one is for our producer Mike. He's not here, but we talked about 203k loans a lot. He still doesn't understand what a 203k loan is. I tried to explain it to him, but maybe you could do a better job than I can. Hey, you explain what a 203k loan is?
Sure. So a 203k loan is a renovation loan. It's a FHA backed renovation loan, which allows you to typically put between 3 and 3.5% down on a property. But the most important part is that they will cover the construction cost or the building cost or build out cost of your asset. So it means you're getting the acquisition money, the purchase money, and you're getting the renovation or fixed money, the construction money. You're getting all that from your lender and you're still using one down payment. You'll get the money in what's called draws or installments. They want to make sure you're not just blowing it and you're doing the right construction. But FHA or your banks will cover up to 96.5% or whatever their guidelines are of your acquisition and the full rehab under a 203k loan. So you get to buy the property, 1 to 4 units, even 1 to 4 units with a store attached. You can buy the asset and fix it up all within one loan for as little as 3.5% or 3% down.
And you have to live with that property.
It must be an owner occupied property, owner occupied residence.
So when you're looking at a property, right, you talk about ROI. People hear about ROI a lot. Like, what does that mean?
It means everything. ROI is the root of money. It's the root of investing. Think about it. Like, you're an investor or entrepreneur, a business owner, a real estate entrepreneur. You're doing it to receive. The literal definition of an entrepreneur or a real estate investor, the definition is someone who invests capital and hopes to seek a profit, right? So ROI really, it gives you the measurement tool to compare apples to apples on your profits. So let me make it even simpler. If you have $10,000, right, or $100,000, or $1 million, or $10 million, either way, that money has an opportunity cost. You could put that money a bunch of different places. You can invest in a t-shirt line. You could invest in a podcast. You could invest in a real estate. You could invest in a Uber, whatever you want to do. So your return on that investment is going to allow you to see what's the best use of my money or the best use of the opportunity cost of my money. Right? So your ROI helps dictate that. So you can look at your capital in a checking account. So let's leave your $10,000 in a checking account. You're going to get 0.001%. So you're going to get like a dollar on your $10,000, right? You put that money in a 401k or a CD, you might get 3% on your money, or $300 on $10,000. So then you look at other instruments where you can invest your money, and the ROI is going to tell you your $10,000 or your capital parked here makes you this rate of return versus any other place of rate of return. So the ROI really, or your return on investment, is just an indicator based on how much you invested, how much profit you made, what that rate is of return on those profits in that investment.
So like, how do you, like, evaluate that for a real estate property, right? Because it's easy, because I'm a financial advisor, right? So I'm a little biased about stocks, but this is a different conversation. But it's easy to look at.
And I'm biased about real estate.
It's easy to look at a rate of return for an investment because you can see what it did for the last 5, 3, 10 since its inception, right? Real estate's a little bit more, it's a little tricky. So how can you
I think real estate's a little more easy.
All right. Fair enough. But so how do you look at that and evaluate that from a home to say, okay, this rate of return I expect to get 15% in the next 3 years? Like, you do that based off of comps in the neighborhood, you do that based off of how do you do that?
Well, it depends if you're purchasing as a owner occupied home buyer, right? I don't necessarily look at my ROI from a perspective of as a home buyer, right? I still look at the opportunity cost of money. I say, okay, if I got to put 3.5% or 3% down on this home, or even 20% down on this home, right? So it's still the opportunity cost of my money. So say I want to buy a $300,000 home, and the bank says, okay, you got to put 10% down. So now I got to put $30,000 down to buy this home, mm-hmm. right? Or it could be 3% down. I got to put $9,000 down to buy this home. So now I'm looking at, well, what else would I do with my $9,000? Or what else would I do with my $30,000? So from a home perspective, I know that by me owning this property, and it could be a duplex or a multifamily where I can live for free and rent the other units out. But even if I'm not renting the other units out and living for free, by living in a single family or townhouse or condo, I'm going to live somewhere anyway. I'm going to be paying rent to somebody somewhere to have a roof over my head. So if I can be paying myself and paying the mortgage with this $10,000 down or this $30,000 down or $9,000 down, $30,000 down, but then I get the future appreciation and equity from the home, and then I'm getting the tax advantages from owning the home, from the interest on the mortgage, the depreciation of the building, the closing costs on the asset. And then I got the power and control of the asset, right? Again, not to mention for the multifamily, I'm getting cash flow. I consider all those advantages as to, well, what else would I have done with that $10,000? So if that $10,000, just say, in the stock market would have gave me 7%, then I know I'm making $700 a year on that $10,000, plus compounding interest, of course. Mm-hmm. But essentially, you say $700 a year on my $10,000. Mm-hmm. That same $10,000 could have been in my house, gaining me appreciation and equity over the years. So now let's say in a 10-year period. So you put money in a stock at a 10-year period, and you got $700 a year, or say $7,000. Let's say with compounding interest, you now got $10,000. So you put $10,000 in a stock, and in 10 years, you got $10,000 ROI on that asset. Mm-hmm. Now you put $10,000 down on your residential property, and over that same 10 years, your asset went up in value $70,000, $50,000, $30,000, right? Just by living there and doing something you were going to do anyway. So therefore, to me, just from a homeowner perspective, it makes better sense. Plus the tax advantages you receive during that time, because you can depreciate 27.5% of the asset over the years, plus the other benefits I gave you. So I look at that, and that's just a homeowner perspective, which is not even the best example. From an investor perspective, I'm looking at the future market value, or the comps, or the ARV if it's a fix and flip, or I'm looking at the cap rate, which is basically the ROI of the rental income from the unit, mm-hmm. and those tax advantages at the same time. So for an investor, you got the benefits of cash flow, which is rental income, passive income, mailbox money. You got the benefits of appreciation and equity as you just live there or rent it out, and it probably goes up in value over time. You got the opportunities for all the tax benefits, and as an investor, you get more tax benefits than you do as a homeowner. Yeah. So you could depreciate not only the interest on the mortgage, the maintenance on the property, the cost segregation on the property, and all these things. So now you're getting a bigger bang for your buck as an investor because you have so many financial benefits from owning that asset. And that's not to mention if you get into the space of 75 units or more, 20 units or more in a multifamily apartments, now you got more cost segregation, more doors, more rental income, more cash flow, more tax depreciation, all for the same investment you would have put somewhere else.
Another thing that we've spoken about and people still are not quite clear on, and now that we're in Atlanta, I remember the first time hearing about opportunity zones, I saw T.I. talking about them.
Yeah.
And shout out to Tip.
Shout out to King Tip.
And so we started researching it and get a better information on it. Can you explain that to the audience, like how that works and how capital gains tax plays a part in it?
Yeah, sure. Opportunity zones is really the biggest transfer of family wealth that will happen in our lifetime. It happened since the Great Depression. Opportunity zones is literally set up to use an urban community as a decoy to allow wealthy folks to roll their money over to the next generation. So what happens in opportunity zones is there's over 8,000 opportunity zone tracts all throughout the country. These are mostly urban areas, some rural areas, blighted areas that they say need investment dollars. And so what they're allowing the wealthy to do, and those who have capital gains, either from their businesses, from their stock portfolios, or from their real estate assets, as people realize capital gains or liquidate their portfolios to receive capital gains, they can roll their capital gains over, right? The capital gains, which will be taxable income. They would have to pay like a 30% or whatever percent tax rate on the capital gains. So the government is allowing them through this legislation to roll their capital gains over into an opportunity zone through an opportunity zone fund into a qualified opportunity zone track. And if they invest that money there, they will get a 10% discount or tax coupon on that capital gain. So if my capital gains is $100,000 and I roll it all over to opportunity zone, that means now my capital gains taxable income is $90,000 if for the first 5 years. Mm-hmm. Then if they keep it there for an additional 2 years or 7 years total, they get another 5% tax coupon. So now my taxable income is $85,000. So now instead of paying Uncle Sam $30,000 on my $100,000, mm-hmm. I'm now paying Uncle Sam 30% on my $85,000 or like $24,000, right, on my taxable income. Then the other benefit is if I leave that capital gains investment into that asset for 10 years or more, any future capital gains or profits made from that asset, I can completely defer all the taxable income on that asset moving forward. So I can roll over my capital gains, get a discount on my original investment of 15% after 7 years, and then any future capital gains from the asset that I put into the opportunity zone. So I can take my capital gains, go into the hood, build a whole new strip mall, whole new skyscraper, whole new hotel, whole new something that don't even help this community at all, mm-hmm. and gentrify it, and then be able to roll all the profits of that asset over in 10 years, sell it off to the market at a higher cap rate or a lower cap rate, more profit, and be able to take all that money out totally tax-free. That's what Opportunity Zones is.
And in order to invest in Opportunity Zone, you have to be an Opportunity Zone fund, right? Correct?
Yes. It's, I believe it's an 8996T form through the IRS to be Opportunity Zone fund.
One of the toughest parts is that a lot of us, especially in our communities, we don't have capital gains. We don't even know what capital gains
are. No capital gains.
but it's for us. Right. But it's for us, though.
Yeah, it's for us.
Let alone have
most
it.
I think it would have been more advantageous to have a financial or tax designation that actually service the people that are in that community and the kind of money they receive and help the working class roll their capital over into those kind of funds and receive those benefits.
Right.
So, all right. Corporate veil. What is that?
Y'all want everything. bro. Corporate veil is your LLC or your corporate structure. It's the way you protect yourself and your assets. It's the way in which you protect yourself from and really it's asset protection, long story short. It's the way you set up your entities in a way that you have the best tax advantages from your entities, the best liability protection for your entities. And it's just a way that, you know, a sophisticated investor or entrepreneur should be setting up their company.
All right. Well, you passed the test with flying colors. we didn't give them free notice about what the questions were going to ask. But
when you know, you know. In real life.
Passed the test with flying colors. So in the next segment, we're going to go into the Tulsa Real Estate Fund. We're going to explain that in detail and talk about everything else that you have.
The historic Tulsa Real Estate Fund. Let's be clear.
Facts. So you have the real estate crowd fund, right? So it's a little different. It's a different way to invest in real estate as opposed to just a person just doing it on their own, right? So what is a real estate crowd fund? Like what's the details of that?
Well, our particular fund, the opportunity is for non-accredited investors, meaning those who have a net worth less than $1 million or make less than $250,000 a year. For non-accredited investors or accredited investors and institutions, family offices, and all kinds of capital partners can all invest in one vehicle. Our non-accredited investors and just all investors, our minimum investment is $500, and you will be an equity owner in our company and own shares of our entire portfolio, which currently consists of an Opportunity Zone property in East Point, Georgia, 5 minutes from the airport, called the Legacy Center, 2.6 acre campus, over 30,000 square feet, which would be a co-working space, a financial empowerment center and training center, entrepreneur training center, as well as 98-unit apartment complex in Macon, Georgia, as well as 28 units of student housing we're developing here. Mm-hmm. And at the AUC, where the historically black colleges are, Clark, Spelman, and Morehouse, as well as other 14 units, 7 units, and multiple other investments that we've either funded or partake in as investors and developers through the fund. So for a $500 minimum investment, you get your prorated share of equity in our company. You get an 8% preferred return that's annual, and that's accumulating annually. And you get your share of 50% of the profits that our fund you know, projects to bring in over the course of our portfolio and our performance.
Now, President Obama had is it the Project Rebuild Fund?
He's the man.
Was the idea for the Tulsa Fund, was it birthed at that point, or was it something that you had envisioned prior to it?
Yeah, back in my early mortgage days in like 2007, 8, 9, I would flick through the MLS and different, you know, listing systems. And I would see hotels and hospitals. And I would think about, I always had this vision to bridge the gap between real estate and pop culture. Like, I always wanted to put the whole community on. Like, once I got on, I wanted to put the whole hood on, you know, in real estate. And so when I would see these large assets, I would always think like, yo, what if we could bust these down? What if we can chip in and go in on these assets? And there was no vehicle to do that at that time. And so after the Freddie Gray uprising in Baltimore in 2015, I was at a panel that BET bust up a busloads of Bloods and Crips from Ground Zero, where the CVS was burned down in Baltimore after the Freddie Gray uprising. And I was part of that panel with Tamika Mallory, Mark Lamont Hill, and others. And they were asking, like, what's the solutions for our community? And one of the Bloods or Crips or Baltimore, you know, crowd members yelled from the stands, "We need to build a Black Wall Street, yo." And so I'm like, okay, if you think the community needs a Black Wall Street or economic, you know, kind of stronghold, I raised my hand and was like, okay, that's on my watch. Whoever want to build a Black Wall Street, meet me after. This is 2015. Mm-hmm. And so I built with them. I went down to Baltimore, got on the ground, talking to them, seeing what the problems are in the community. And I thought about it like, well, what does a Black Wall Street look like? And for those not familiar, Black Wall Street was, there's many Black Wall Streets throughout America. One of the most notable was a Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, called Greenwood, where it was 36 square blocks of over 2,000 homes and businesses that were burned down. They were built up in less than 20 years and burned down in 1921 in one day, on June 1st. And so I was like, well, we're going to build a sustaining community or be able to impact our communities. It's cool to hashtag Black Wall Street and group economics and say it, but what does it look like in real life? Right? Yeah. How do you actually bring it to fruition? Yeah. What's the economic vehicle that allows us to pull our dollars together to build a Black Wall Street? And so that's when I started the research then. And through that research, we then uncovered the Jobs Act, which was just in passed. Mm-hmm. And I thought back to my old mortgage days about what I knew about financing and lending and investing and all those things. And so anyway, we went through the research, and over 4 years of due diligence and research and development, we put ourselves in position to IPO on June 1st, the anniversary of the Black Wall Street bombing. On June 1st of 2018, we IPO'd this fund to the tune of, you know, over, I think, nearly $2 million raised our first 24 hours. Our website crashed 3 times the first day. I was so pissed. But, you know, so many hits on our website and so much just national attention. And we've raised, you know, several million dollars to date and have built a multi-million dollar portfolio just with the first round of our fund in our first year as the, you know, historic Tulsa Real Estate Fund, the first Black-owned real estate crowdfund in history.
So how does that work as far as, because we talked about the tech fund and you have to like wait a couple years. So each, I guess, company is different. Like for your company, it's like you have to wait 1 year before you can start to receive money from it.
So you one year lockup until you're eligible to receive your quarterly dividends.
Okay.
But we cannot pay dividends until the fund is profitable.
Profitable. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if we're developing assets that take 2 and 3 years to develop, then you obviously have to wait for the development of those assets, the stabilization of those assets, the rents, the, you know, equity, the refi, all that to become profitable.
So it's a long-term play.
It's a long-term play. It's a legacy fund.
Right.
Right. And so that's what we are really campaigning for, and getting everyone to understand. If you want to fix and flip a home and make quick money or wholesale real estate with no cash or credit, cool. Come to Jay Morrison Academy. We'll teach you that.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that in your everyday life.
Right.
But if you want to chip in as a collective, something that fits within your budget, where we all can chip in to empower our own communities and fund our own projects and fund our own deals without going to anyone else for help, going to anyone else's table, that's what this is.
So that's the hold period. It varies based on the asset, or how's that work?
On the whole portfolio,
okay.
Right? So like, say for instance, we're building a legacy center, which is about a year and a half, you know, development or whatever the case is. Okay, but we have other fix and flips we funded that are instantly giving us mortgage money, points, revenue right now.
Okay.
And then we might build whatever later. So it's a balance of the whole portfolio that we have. So some assets are instantly making money, some assets are long-term investments. But overall, once the whole fund is profitable, you then get paid out. You're accumulating 8% over every year, which is preferred, meaning before we split any profits, you get your 8%. And every year, you were owed your 8%. And then you get your share of future profits. So now when we stabilize the legacy center, our projections are we'll stabilize it in the next year, 2 years, 3 years tops. We stabilize at Legacy Center from our leasing model and raise that value based on a market cap rate from a $3.6 million development to a $7.2 million valuation, and we either sell it and lease buyback, or we refinance and pull most of our capital out and pay our investors back, and you know what I mean, and all that, and we still keep the asset. So it's just like, it's, I mean, it's kind of complicated, but not. It just depends on your level of sophistication in real estate.
Yeah.
But the point is, at the end of the day, this is why I try to kind of simplify, is like, it's a long-term play for folks to be, invest capital. One, you shouldn't invest any money you can't afford to lose. You shouldn't invest, you know, in any investment. Right. You understand?
Sure.
No investment's guaranteed. I'm not saying it's guaranteed.
Sure.
Standard procedure.
Right. But it's for that discretionary income, that money that we blow, that we don't, right? So we blow hundreds on sneakers, hundreds on a vacation, hundreds on sparkles in the club, hundreds on, right? All types of, our loud bill, our happy hour bill, right? We blow all this money. But what if we were to revert a lot of that capital, you know, even our Christmas, Valentine's Day, and birthday money, like our consumer money.
Right.
If we were to revert that capital and be able to pull it together to do something awesome and impactful and historic for our community, it's that play, right? So that's what everyone has to understand. It's about us pulling our own capital to control our own resources in a very transparent, a very regulated, a very sophisticated way. And you know, again, I invested in the fund 10,000. Others matched me 10,000. Some invested 1,000. Some invested 40,000. Some invested 500.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about doing what's in your capacity, but understand that we're doing it as a socially entrepreneurial vehicle with mission involved. It's not just a real estate fund. Like, that's easy to do. It's a real estate fund, but this is a fund for us to be able to control our own dollars, manage our own dollars, and do it in a way where it's not relying on any one person to save us. I don't believe we should wait on Jay-Z or Oprah or Puffy. It shouldn't be their obligation to have to fund the whole community. We all should chip in to fund our damn selves.
That's a fact.
What's the demographic of people that you're seeing that are investing? Is it like a millennial move, or is there a certain age that you're seeing that
It's very diverse, man. I mean, even ethnicities. I mean, we have white investors, Asian investors, black investors, obviously many African investors in America. But demographic-wise, there are, I would almost want to say 50-50 millennial and whatever that other generation is.
That's powerful.
We have a lot of working class, you know, moms, dads, people have been looking for something like this their whole life. Like, they'd have been in the civil rights movement. They'd have been, you know, born right after the civil rights movement. They was part of the Black Panther movement. They're part of the 80s Reaganomics and all that. But people have been looking for a solution for our community and who are doing well or wherever they're at in their life and haven't had a vehicle, or to the millennial who just wants to own a piece of an apartment building for $500. Like, imagine that. You can invest $500 and literally be a fractional owner in a 98-unit apartment complex plus commercial real estate.
Yeah, that's a fact.
In real life.
And so the Tulsa Fund has been around for a little over a year, a little over a year now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you guys got off to a historic start, and then, but you had some issues that you beat with the feds, right? And we spoke about some issues with the feds. Shout out to my brother, Chris Gotti. That's our guy from Murder, Inc. And he told us about their issues with the feds, how they beat the feds. So the reason why I bring this up is that we have to be, we have to tell the full story. A lot of times when stories are told, it's like, oh, I knew it. But then it's like, if you get exonerated, that part never really gets told, right? So can you talk about that a little bit as far as like the investigation? Or I don't even know what to call it. I don't want to call it an investigation, but whatever.
A probe, investigation, subpoena, right? So we were subpoenaed by the FBI, the DOJ, FBI and the SEC. I don't have an exact reason why. My instinct is that all the Negroes that thought this was a scam, why, I don't know, but they thought this was a scam or a Ponzi scheme and kicked up fussing and making YouTube pages and Facebook pages and really bashing this historic fund that's for our community. I believe, you know, that and other activity by people that are making like fake pages on Instagram and trying to do PayPal Tulsa scams and all that. I think that, you know, likely put us on folks' radar. Obviously, I'm not the most conventional fund manager with my background as well. But however the less, we ended up on their radar, and they subpoenaed us for documents. They want to see over 50,000 emails. They want to see our financial records. They want to see our infrastructure, you know, all.
Yeah, the whole thing.
So we said, all right, here you go. You know, here's the whole thing. Follow the money, right? Like we say, follow the money. And I won't say we beat the feds. I don't want to put it like that. But I will say that They have been gracious and I believe fair with us, you know, in doing their job. And after reviewing our emails and reviewing our financial records, they ceased their investigation. You know, they reserved the right to investigate at any time, but they did cease their investigation.
So they thoroughly looked into it and they didn't find anything nothing. That was.
I'm just saying. I'm just saying they had 50,000 emails. They had our financial records, our audits, our bank statements, our bank accounts, our whole everything, and they ceased their investigation.
No, it's important. Right? It's important for people to understand. That's good.
Absolutely. So sure.
People should know that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I'm just not. You know, I don't want no beef with them.
Listen. We ain't gonna spike the football.
We're not spiking the football. Listen.
What'd you say? Shai said this the other day. Don't worry. Nobody's listening.
Right. But we're just saying that they're. I mean, one can rationally think that if there was. Something super egregious or, you know, any major infractions that you know, whatever. I don't even want to speak too much. I'll just say that, you know, God is good. We've operated this fund in integrity. It's my legacy on the line, bro. I'm not going to be the guy that raised money from the community that went and ran off with the bag. Like, that's not going to be my legacy. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? I worked too hard for this. You know, I got a family that looks up to me, and many people around the community look up to me. We're just doing our best job, man, and do something that never was done before. Is it going to be perfect? No. I'm the trailblazer. It's pioneer. I don't have a blueprint. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, but we are doing our best. We're operating with integrity, transparency. You know, the whole first year of the fund, I deferred my salary. I took no personal salary, no personal compensation the whole first year, although I freaking deserve it. Mm-hmm. But, again, we're just trying to move right, man, and just, like, get our people to feel comfortable trusting each other, because the reality is, you know, which is going to be one of our next campaigns, we're going to be challenging everyone, you guys, everybody, to invest, is that, listen, it only takes 40,000 of us to invest $1,000 to raise $40 million. That's it, Iraq. Like, divert it from somewhere else, 40,000 of us put up $1,000, we got $40 million. $40 million is a 20% down payment on a $200 million project. Yeah. Bro, it's just not that hard.
No, that's a fact. Yeah. So what's your vision, like, 5 years, like where do you?
$1 billion of assets under management, $1 billion black in 5 years,
and all kinds of different properties,
all kinds of assets, communities, strip hotels, malls, hospitals, strip malls,
international
funding. It's not, mind you, I don't want to be the biggest developer in the world.
Okay,
I want to be a great fund manager. The goal of the fund is not just to direct them. We acquire some assets because we have great resources and relationships, you know, within different real estate communities, so we get good deals. Mm-hmm. But really, we want to privately lend and fund other people's deals. Like, that's really my focus, is like, okay, you come with a project that you found in your community. All right, let's fund your project. Mm-hmm. Right? You came with a strip mall, or you inherited some acres of land and you want to develop that. Okay, let's fund your project. So, or you got a loan from a bank and the bank's willing to give you 80%, but you don't got the 20% equity. Well, let's give you the 20% equity, right? So the goal of the fund is not for Jay Morrison to build a bunch of real estate. The goal of the fund is to be able to really be the rich uncle for our community, to be for all of us though.
I'm glad you said that, because I just thought about that. We talked about it earlier. You guys are funding, you're giving out money now. We're not giving out, but you're loaning money now.
We've been from day one.
Can you
funding
talk about that?
Deals,
like,
A black woman out of Lake Charles, Louisiana came to us. She got approved by a private lender that was not of our ethnicity. They approved her for a loan on 14 units. She got her appraisal back. The property appraised for $200,000 more than she thought.
Oh, wow.
Then the lender came back and said, well, you know what? We're going to need a bigger down payment. I never heard of that. A lender should feel more comfortable about loaning you money if your property appraised for more.
Right.
Because, you know what I mean? They went and tried to get more money for a down payment that she couldn't afford. They were trying to really box her out so she couldn't purchase it and probably try to go behind the door and grab it from her.
Yeah.
She came to me through one of my mentors, and we end up funding her whole project, the rehab, the construction, the acquisition, and all that. And now to date, she has her 14 units still with a few $100,000 of equity.
So how do if people want to contact you about the funding, like just for the funding standpoint, how do they, is there like a
both
certain channel?
Yeah, funding, and if you want to be a partner with us, right? I'm talking about not a donation, it's not a Kickstarter. This is, you'd be an equity owner and a partner, or to submit your deal for funding or capital partnership, go to Tulsa, TULSA, realestatefund.com.
Nah, Jay, man, thank you for joining us. Like, yeah, I said, this is something that we were looking forward to. We're glad that we got to do this in real life.
Real life.
And once again, y'all gotta stop asking now. Y'all gotta have somebody else that y'all
gotta
ask about.
Y'all gotta pick a new
stop
target.
DMing.
They did it.
Stop
they
DMing
did it.
Me.
So, they got big homie.
All right, so you just spoke about that. But okay, so everything else, what is the contact information for all of your other businesses and everything else you have going on, social media, and how can the people...
Yeah, appreciate that. I mean, I want to challenge everyone, man. Like, you guys heard me spit game here today. Like, I know what I know. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know this stuff. I know how to translate and relate this stuff. We teach this very affordably, very relatably, and very accessibly in the Jay Morrison Academy. Again, Inc. 500, top 10 educational companies in the country. You guys can go to Jay Morrison, that's J-A-Y, MorrisonAcademy.com. We have a brand new curriculum we just created. It's over 85 lessons on what we call the RBCs. So like in school, they teach us the ABCs. Mm-hmm. So we teach the RBCs, real estate, business, and credit. So we go over everything from wholesaling real estate with no cash or credit to fixing, to flipping, to home ownership 101. We go over corporate veil strategies. We go over branding your business, marketing your business, exit strategy, operations, how to manage and hire your team. We go over credit strategies, personal credit, family credit, business credit, credit lines, credit leverage, like all that. Bro, the whole game we bust down.
It's a
lot. I literally was like, okay, I gotta dump everything out of my head and put into this curriculum. Like, because every year we update the curriculum. Okay. I'm like, I want to dump everything out that I have. My partner Will Roundtree, my partner Isaac Grace, we all put it together. And I mean, in that curriculum, we have the quizzes, the tests, the assessments. Our basic curriculum starts at $197 for the year, bro. Like all that corporate veil strategy, home ownership, flipping, holding, landlording, all that for $197 for the whole year. Like, a fraction of your community college. And then we have another curriculum where you can actually get weekly mentorship calls. You get all that plus weekly mentorship calls, career opportunities, joint venture opportunities, funding opportunities with us. And that curriculum is just $497 for the year. So like, I'm really giving the community game. I mean, at like $16 to like $30 a month type of thing. So, you know, again, Jay Morrison Academy, you can find us for education. You want to partner with me and with us on real estate assets as a passive investor and partner, go to TulsaRealEstateFund.com. And for just everyday, you know, game, inspiration, motivation, or whatever else you think I bring to the table, I'm at Mr. J. Morrison on all platforms. So that's at Mr. J. Morrison, YouTube, Facebook fan page, Instagram, of course. I'm just trying to,
LinkedIn.
I'm on LinkedIn. My team runs it. I don't run it. So you befriend me, it ain't me. But LinkedIn as well. Tulsa Real Estate Fund has a YouTube as well, and Tulsa Real Estate Fund on IG. That page is popping, JMA. So I'm just really proud of the companies that first and foremost, before the companies, I want to give thanks, not in a cliche way, but thanks to God just for really my testimony and stress testing me. You know, I've let God stress test me to make sure I was ready for what he had for me and who he wanted me to be. So I thank God for his grace, and shout out to my wife as well for holding me down. And but also, though, yeah, just I'm proud of the companies we built, man. Like, this was no easy journey. I get in my bag and I talk my shit, but it's my way of kind of just like replenishing myself, because I pour out and I give so much. We didn't even mention the 63 free corner classes I've done over the last four years.
Those
I've taught
crazy.
28 cities, 63 free corner classes, even a legendary 24-hour corner class here in Atlanta on Lee and Abernathy, which I'll be doing another one. So, you know, I'm putting in work, but again, it's all part of that initial mission I talked about, of bridging the gap between real estate and pop culture. I don't care if I got to do it on the corner, if I got to do it online, if I got to create a fund to do it, if I got to have a school to do it. We got a real estate brokerage coming out soon and a bunch of other opportunities that we're going to be bringing to the public and to the people. And we got the Legacy Center, the Black House, the all-black building in East Point, 30,000 square feet. That's for all of us. So I just, you know, look forward to building with you all. Thank you guys for having me, man.
Yeah, appreciate you coming on, man.
Troy, housekeeping items?
Yeah, shout out to everybody on Patreon.com/onyourleisure, our Proud to Pay program, everybody that supports that. Like we said, we have a 5-tier program. You can join at any tier. There's different features at each tier. We got new members again, man. Every week we get to shout out people, so shout out to them. Kino, I'm hoping I'm saying that right, and Nakia. Shout out to them and everybody that's been supporting our Patreon, and shout out to everybody that's been purchasing the merch. My assets over liability shirt is doing really well, and people keep supporting that. And we got new merch, like we said.
You're leaving with one.
So what happens when people come on after they do the episode? They become EYL alumni. Now you officially are part of the alumni.
I graduated with honors.
He just got his doctorate in EYL University.
Yeah.
So shout out to everybody that's doing that, and our tour shirts are out too. So every city we go to, we bring shirts. And we have shirts from the cities. So shout out to everybody that's in person, purchasing those.
For sure, for sure. And then don't forget, by the time you guys hear this, I think it'll be 2 days left. So it's not too late to register for our free network meet and greet in Chicago, 9/26. And we're having our first workshop in Brooklyn, but it's also going to be live streamed all over the world. So make sure you register that. And that's going to be 10/17. And the book tip of this week, because we always give a book tip, is your book.
Yeah.
The Lord of My Land.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Lord of My Land. Make sure you check that out. And yeah.
Don't just be a landlord, man. Be the lord of your land.
That's a fact. That's a fact. So, yeah, thank you guys for rocking with us.
In real life.
We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.